I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We are on the eve of Game 1 of the NBA Finals. It's been a little while since we've had some actual NBA basketball to go home and watch. And now we are down to the Final 2, Oklahoma City and Indiana. I think every time you get a little bit of a break, you start seeing the pundits and the national analysts talk about the matchup and if it's good basketball, if it's bad basketball, what the ratings are going to look like. Basketball fans don't care about that. I'll be the first to say it. I think we got a really intriguing matchup. I don't know how long this final series goes, but I'm excited for Game 1 tomorrow. And I know our next guest is as well. We have James Holis, our NBA analyst, joining us right now. James, great to get you back on 24 hours before tip-off of Game 1 of the Finals.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. This is going to be a nice series. But the more I watched the last Eastern Conference Finals, the more disappointed I was in Boston because they dropped the ball. But you know what? Nice consolation prize. We're going to have the high-powered Pacers offense against the lockdown Thunder defense. Let's go.
We don't get the two best teams in the NBA in the finals. And I think that there's a variety of reasons because of that. If we had the two best teams, it would be Oklahoma City and Boston. And that's not a knock at Indiana. I think every time I say that, people think I'm throwing shade at Indiana. That is not the case. But when you look at the two best rosters, Indiana has taken advantage of every opportunity that has kind of been laid before them. They've taken advantage of opposing teams' miscues. And I tip my hat to them for that, James.
So, yeah, I agree. And this is where it's funny how words mean things and definitions. Hey, we got the team represented from the East and the West. Why aren't they the best two teams? I get what you're saying, though, because I felt Boston was the best team in the East all year. The Thunder have been the best team in the NBA all year. But the best teams find ways. The best teams don't blow two 20-point leads at home. So maybe it's semantics. Maybe we're arguing about we're on the same side here. But kudos to Indiana. Look, this is 2 years in a row they've made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Maybe we have been sleeping on them. They had a little hiccup at the beginning of the season because Halliburton wasn't really healthy and Nembhard was out. Since December or January, they've been one of the best teams in the NBA by all advanced metrics and by record. So this is, no matter what, how you want to slice it, we have two really good teams who deserve to be in the finals.
Let's start by talking about Indiana. And the last time I got on the air with you and I was praising a coach, it was Tom Thibodeau, and he's been fired now. I don't believe the same thing's going to happen to Rick Carlisle. But when I look at what Carlisle has been able to accomplish, it is absolutely incredible to me to get this Pacer team back to the NBA Finals, or into the NBA Finals, rather. And I was making a reference on the show earlier this week to that 2011 NBA championship, where, in my mind, it was the biggest gauntlet that any team has ever gone through to win a title when Carlisle was leading Dallas. They had to get through Portland. They went through the two-time champion Lakers. They get into the NBA Finals, and they get the best out of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. It was an incredible run. And I don't know if the gauntlet has been to that, and I know it hasn't been to that extreme, but nonetheless, you got to give Rick Carlisle credit. I think he is one of the better coaches that we have seen over the last 25-plus years in the NBA, and I think this is proof of it.
It's so impressive to me what Carlisle has done. You're absolutely right. That 2011 run, masterpiece, and I don't think we speak enough about the coaching job he did to really bottle up LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and just turn them into an ineffective team. Like, that's an incredible, remarkable effort. And the fact that was 14 years ago, and the league has changed so much in the last 14 years, and somehow Carlisle has kept his finger on the pulse. That he runs an amazing offense. He has a cohesive defense, and these guys really believe. That takes a lot, because sometimes you have a player's coach, right, and you have guys who are really good at managing personalities, and then you have guys who are really good at X's and O's. And very rare are the coach who can do both. And I think we're seeing in Carlisle a guy who has proven he can do both at a very high level.
And I think the storyline for me, James, going into this, is an elite defense. That's what Oklahoma can do, right? I mean, they are relentless on that side of the ball. What do they do against an explosive offense? And again, I can make some comparisons to the last time Rick Carlisle won an NBA championship. What could that offense do, right against some of the explosiveness that they would see throughout the postseason, because they also went through Oklahoma City, who had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, right? So I draw some comparisons in saying, okay, this right here, what we're looking at right now, is an elite offense. How do they stack up against an elite defense in OKC?
And that's what's so fascinating, right? I think we probably all assumed that the Cavaliers were going to dismantle the Pacers, and that didn't happen. I think a lot of people assumed that the size of the Pacers would kind of overwhelm, the size of the Knicks would overwhelm the Pacers, and that didn't happen. So we do understand that the modern NBA has changed so much, but it's still very sophisticated offensively. And Carlisle did a great job implementing these intricate offensive set pieces and just principles that his team abides by. That's why it's like second nature for them, like breathing. The big thing with the Thunder is their defensive flexibility, right? With Cason Wallace, Lou Dort, and Crusoe. Between those three guys, man, they deploy just such a versatile defense with Chet backing them up, and even a guy like Shea, who's proven to be a above average defender. So it's this great defensive depth versus this versatile and hard hitting and quick hitting offense, and this is going to be a study in contrast of styles.
What do you think about the big man matchup here in the finals? Because you got two very, very capable double double guys from Oklahoma City, and yet really one of the most important players for Indiana throughout this postseason run. Miles Turner has been very, very good. Plus, you have Pascal Siakam, who was the MVP of the Eastern Conference Finals. I like the big man matchup in this one, and I don't know that that's being talked about enough either.
It's a very intriguing matchup, right? And it's going to have to play out, because I don't think I can prognosticate how it's going to look. Miles Turner, quintessential stretch big, good at a lot of things, not great at any one thing, capable shot blocker. He can go off for 2025, and then the other side, you got the twin towers of Chet Holmgren and Hartenstein, two diametrically opposite centers, but both of them really skilled, very smart. They know how to play their roles, so it's going to be a chess match, right?
The one statistic, I don't know if you want to call it an advanced metric, whatever you want to refer to it as, the analytics of the game, that I find extremely fascinating is the fact that the Pacers have outscored their playoff opponent by 8.5 per game in transition. And then you take a look at what Oklahoma City does on the defensive end of the floor, and they are limiting, I think it's like the lowest percentage of opponent possessions throughout this postseason. So when you take a team that wants to run against a team that can really slow it down defensively, that's where the chess match is right there. I think it's really that simple.
Absolutely, and just the way we talked about Carlisle and his offensive principles and what he's instilled, the defensive principles of the Thunder, who are great offensively, but the fact is their defense is like, it's second nature. They do it without breathing, without thinking, and they just do it like breathing. The fact that the rotations are always tight, they shift on the fly between zone and man. They can play hybrid man zones. They have a knack of knowing when to double team and when to have that backside defender kind of just scram at the offense and blow up a set. So 100%, we know that the Pacers want to get out and run. This will be good to see, because we know that, again, those principles are locked in for the Thunder. They get back. They run textbook, just efficient defense. And we know Pacers like to go on a make or miss. So can the Pacers somehow exploit? It's all about the margin. Exploit those margins and get an extra 4, extra 6 points a game just by quick hitting offense. This will be fascinating to watch.
How many games does this series go, and who wins it?
So my heart wants to say I'm rooting for the Pacers, right? I love the way they play. I love what they represent. I think that, you know, Hallie can be a little corny sometimes, a little bit cringe-inducing, but he's a great player, and I think it's all coming from a place of he really enjoys the game. So you got to embrace that. So my heart wants to say Pacers in 7. I got to be my head says something different. I'm going to say the Thunder take this in. I'm going to give them 6. I think they might slip up once, and there's going to be one hard-fought game that the Pacers steal. But I think the Thunder are kind of clearly a better team here.
I think they're clearly the better team as well. I agree with you pretty much on everything that you just said. If I have to pick a dog in the fight to cheer for, I do like Indiana. I like everything from the coaching staff all the way down to the 12th man on the bench. I like the way it's constructed. I think it's a good story, and I think they've been one of the most slept-on teams, as you alluded to, over the last 2 years. I just don't think they have enough. I could also see this series. I picked OKC, by the way, in 6 yesterday on the show. I'm going to stick with it. I could also see this, James, being a series that goes 4 or 5 games, but it's a competitive 4 or 5. I think too often we see a series end in a sweep or we end in 5, and we don't look at the context of it. I think it's compelling in that sense, but I see Oklahoma City winning this before it gets to 7, well before it gets to 7.
Ask any Celtics fan last year, and they say that even though we swept the Pacers and every other series went at least 5, right? Even though we swept the Pacers, every other series went 5, the Pacers was 100% our toughest series last year, with every game coming down to the wire, basically. They don't stop. They don't give up. Even the lead was ballooned to 15, 16s, and the Celtics would take a deep breath. They're right back to 3. So, they have the Pacers. They've shown it this year with some of those heart attack comebacks and heart attack wins they've had. They find a way. They're scrappy. They play. They fun, but they're also going to be gritty and get down the mud with teams. So it's going to be a good series.
James Holos again joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, we can move away from the NBA Finals. We have not had you on since the news of Tom Thibodeau getting Cam from New York broke. Also today, we found out that the Phoenix Suns are going to hire Jordan Ott as their new head coach, pulling him from the Cavaliers bench. Overall, your assessment on Tom Thibodeau and also the Suns getting their guy today in Jordan Ott?
You know, it's funny because there's a wide spectrum. Just like players can be superstars to all-stars to borderline all-stars. Same thing with coaches, I think, right? Everywhere from a bad coach to a great coach, and just all kind of in between. And I think Tibbs is very clearly in the upper echelon of those, you know, kind of like yearly all-star type guys who, even if he's made the all-star game, he plays at a high level. But he has his flaws, and that's where we are with Tibbs. I have a lot of schadenfreude. I listen to the podcasts of teams I don't like, and Knicks pods, I was shocked by how kind of heavy-handed they were with Coach Thibodeau. They all thanked him for what they did, and they appreciate what he's done for the team, getting him out of the mud to where they've been the last couple of years, back-to-back 50-win seasons. But everyone seems like that's about it. It's time for him to go because the flaws are glaring. You know, the rotations, the kind of stubbornness, the being steadfast, not running a modern offense. Those things are going to limit a team. And now in this second apron environment, you don't have years to waste. So I understand. I was kind of shocked that they did it so quickly. But from I guess all the signs are pointing here after the way this year went.
For me, I still don't understand it. You know, you haven't gotten to this point in 25 years. You got a guy who has already passed Pat Riley, 5 years at the helm, right? Back-to-back 50-win seasons. He's doing something correctly. It's the same conversation, though, with Mike Malone, right? There are two types of coaches in the NBA, those who have been fired and those who have not been fired yet. And unfortunately, Tom Thibodeau, who has a lengthy history with this franchise, has been fired multiple times. And I don't know if he gets another head coaching job. I don't think he is relatable to the current landscape of NBA players. If you want to take that as an insult or disrespect, you can. I don't believe he can relate to him. And I think that's first off the number one problem. Also in the NBA, I still believe that, you know what, across the board in professional sports, I don't believe there is a job with less security than an NBA head coach, more so than any other sport that we talk about.
I agree. No matter what you do as an NBA head coach, as far as the NBA is concerned, it's a what have you done for me lately league. We know Tibbs has the accolades. I think, and I agree to a certain extent. I think a certain kind of player loves Thibodeau. I think Brunson probably loves Thibodeau. I'm pretty sure like a guy like OG Anunoby has no issues with Thibodeau.
Josh Hart, right? Josh Hart is a stereotypical guy for a Tom Thibodeau, right?
100%. And I saw the fan base embracing the same way this year, right? But then again, Carl Anthony Towns, right? He had issues with him. There's probably similar issues with him. In Minnesota, all right, because Tibbs wants some defense and toughness of his bigs. And on the defensive end, that's not Carl Anthony Towns. And guess what? Came back over to New York, and we have the same questions about Carl Anthony Towns and his defense and the rotations. So maybe there's some players who aren't built to like a guy like Thibodeau. But he did instill a sense of toughness in this team, that New York kind of grit that the fans love. But this also comes the culture now, right? It's a billion-dollar industry. It's about winning now, and they know the windows can open and shut at warp speed. And sure, as many conference finals this year, it's not guaranteed next year. Teams are going to get better. Injuries can happen. So some teams want to have that long-term, hey, this is our franchise guy. We're building something here. Coach Spo, right? Every team, I think, wants that. But outside of teams like Miami, they're not willing to really dedicate themselves to it. So it's a sad state of affairs, kind of, because you're right. I think he's a really good coach who probably deserves better than what he's gotten.
And I think it all comes down to communication, right? Is Tom Thibodeau a strong communicator? I don't know the answer to that, right? I've never been to a Tom Thibodeau practice. I don't know what it's like to communicate with Tibbs in that regard. I know that the newest head coach of the Phoenix Suns and Jordan Knott, that's what he gets praised for, is being a strong communicator. Plus, he's 40 years old. It's kind of a new wave of NBA coaches. And I think for a guy that's been an assistant, I think he's been an assistant like 13, 14 years in the league, who has strong communication skills, seems like this may be the beginning of a new wave of coaches, James. I don't know what the stability looks like in Phoenix. It's been god-awful over the last five seasons. But a younger head coach with communication skills may go a long way because that locker room was in shambles.
Yeah, and then look at a guy like Dagenau. Like, listen to him speak after one of those games. And he's giving you basically basketball 101, right? And he says it in a very straightforward and very relatable way. I agree with you, man. I think this, you know, just like everything else, there's a new kind of coach, a new kind of more cerebral coach. But it's also about getting, you know, being able to relate to these players. These younger, forward-minded coaches, they seem to be doing a good job. And a guy like Carlisle really stands out then, because even though he's an older coach, these guys seem to adore him, and he runs a very modern offense. So yeah, I the old school way of coaching, Tibbs, I think they say Tibbs coached with his gut a lot and went with feeling. That you can't do that, right? Nowadays, you gotta at least play the numbers somewhat. And I agree with you. He might not get another head coaching job.
James, before I let you go, I do want to get your thoughts on the rebrand for the Orlando Magic. I shouldn't say rebrand. The newest edition of their uniforms, kind of a toss back, kind of a call back to what we saw in the early 90s, and a little bit of an updated font. I don't know. I love the old style of the Orlando Magic unis. I think they're top tier. They could have just went back to the retro. I'd have been perfectly fine with it. But it's a little bit of a callback. Your thoughts on the newest uniforms for the Orlando Magic?
Very much of a callback. I do like the pinstripes.
Yep.
I like the home and aways. That one that's a mix, it has like the blue up top and then the black pinstripes at the bottom.
Doesn't work, right?
They look kind of cartoony. Something about those, that's like a little kid, like a first graders league jersey. But I agree with you on the font. I think they could have went back to the old school. I think it had a capital M, lowercase, everything else. But the big GIC looks a little generic, but I like it. I like the fact that they're embracing their retro. Everyone loves the old pinstripes. I like the fact they're embracing that, and they brought it to the modern world. Could they just brought it back? Absolutely. But I applaud them for listening to their fan base.
We kind of saw the same thing here in the state of Utah, right? I mean, Jazz fans have a soft spot in their heart for the late 90s Mountain uniforms. Ryan Smith knows that. Not only does he bring back the Delta Center, but he brings back kind of a call back to those types of uniforms. It's the same thing with the Orlando Magic. If you talk to an Orlando Magic fan, the soft spot on their heart has got to be the Penny and Shaq era, right? And so I think you're starting to see this a little bit more in the NBA. Callbacks to where the game was just enduring. It was enduring to a lot of fans, right? They love, that's what got them in love with the game of basketball, because we're at that age right now. I think we're seeing a little bit more of this.
Absolutely, right? Even as the game gets more modern and we know that everything's about branding and being like hip and up-to-date, people do kind of pine for those older retro kind of jerseys. And they were really nice. Like you said, the Utah jerseys, I like those a lot. So the Mountain jerseys, those are amazing. So, yeah, I like the fact that teams can dip back in the bag and modernize and kind of bring the older fans together with the younger fans in today's uniform. So I hope more and more teams do that.
He's James Solis, kind enough to join us each week to talk NBA basketball. Game one of the NBA Finals between the Pacers and the Thunder tomorrow night, 6:30 start time, Mountain Time. James, always a pleasure to get you on. I know you're active right now, specifically on X, formerly known as Twitter. Boy, this is it. This is it. This is what we talk all year for, the NBA Finals.
Yeah, man. Hopefully we got a couple more good weeks out of this, right, where we go game seven. But if not, it's been a pleasure, and I'm excited to dive into this, man. I'm going to even go out on a limb. I'm going to call it. Shocker. Pacers win game one.
Ooh, okay. All right. If the Pacers win game one, boy, the story. I you know what I want to see? We saw it already with the Denver Nuggets, right? The Thunder were pushed. They were pushed in that series, and I think there was a lot of narrative starting to float around that they're just not built for this yet. They're too young. How are they going to respond? They respond. They knocked off a team that has plenty of championship vets. They pick up a game seven win. What does it look like on Friday morning if the Pacers win game one? How does the national media handle Oklahoma City losing home court advantage?
National media would not handle it well. It's going to be ridiculous. A huge gross overcorrection about how one team is shook and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think, I think in the big scheme of things, that Coach Daggs have done a great job of keeping his guys centered and mental. So I don't think for the team it means much. But yes, it will be a firestorm. I'll be excited to see if that happens.
James, always a pleasure to get you on. Enjoy game one. We'll talk real soon.
All right, my man. Thanks for having me on. Let's go.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always great to get James Holas along for the ride. And again, game one of the NBA Finals tomorrow. I'm going to be out of the studio the rest of the week. Aiden Mortensen's going to fill in for me tomorrow, and then we'll have the best of Drive Time Sports on Friday. Always fun to be along with you. I will catch you Monday. Until then, be safe. I am out.